Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU Startups. That's vanta.com/EU Startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Andre Retterat, partner at Early Bird Venture Capital and founder of Data-Driven VC. Early Bird VC is a European early-stage VC firm that invests in all development and growth phases of technology companies. With more than 2 billion euros under management, 8 IPOs and 31 trade sales, Early Bird is one of the most established and active venture capital firms in Europe. Andre has a background in computer science and conducted his PhD on the topic of machine learning and the value of data in venture capital. He has been leading Early Bird's engineering team and the development of their data-driven platform, Eagle Eye. Andre, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing. So let's get right into it. So what was, maybe you can tell us also a bit more about what data-driven VC is all about, but also what was the turning point that made you shift from traditional VC to data-driven approach?
I think it's quite interesting looking also at my background. Like I said, I'm an engineer by training, computer science focus, and spent a couple of years in industry before I by accident learned about venture capital when I spent some time studying and researching in the US. Mm-hmm. So got back to Europe and then did an internship in the VC scene and was really frustrated how manual and inefficient all of the workflows were. So outside in from the engineer, you would expect that those who back the most visionary entrepreneurs also right. are quite innovative and digitized themselves. Yeah. And I was really surprised how old school, in a way, of all of the workflows looked like. So in the first place, I thought, okay, this is probably Early Bird. Having been around back then, like more than 20 years already, the firm was founded in 1997. So I thought it's more of like, okay, this is a traditional firm, but that must not be the standard of the industry. Uh-huh. Then I started connecting some research on it on this topic and really trying to understand what is actually the status quo of the industry and what are potential roadblocks when I learned that Early Bird was actually already quite advanced. So back then, Early Bird already had a CRM system. They were tracking kind of the deal flow, running different kind of stats, analysis, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. But majority of the VC firms back then didn't even have a proper CRM system. They were just tracking it in tables and so on and so forth. So that was my trigger point. I then started some research in the UK and finished a PhD here at Technical University in Munich on the topic of machine learning and venture capital. So really, from a research perspective, I came into this whole area, combining my background in computer science and my interest in venture capital.
Sounds awesome. Nice wrap up, Andre. Thank you so much. How does a data-driven approach, you know, give you an edge over traditional VCs in picking the winners?
I think it's twofold. First of all, we need to think about the value chain in venture capital. So if we look at the investment process, we can cluster it into different stages from the sourcing part. And sourcing means really you need to identify all opportunities top of funnel, like all relevant opportunities, which is the sourcing identification part. Then you have the sourcing enrichment part, which means you need to collect as many data points about every company as possible. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the second stage, which is the screening. You need to narrow down the funnel from like a vast amount of opportunities that you cannot humanly handle to a number that you can actually handle with human capacity. So meaning mm-hmm. number that you can jump onto first calls and meetings to see the founders. And then you dive deeper into due diligence, which is the third part. Then you get into the closing, portfolio value creation, and eventually follow-on fundings, and you need to exit the opportunity again. And I think what we do see today, there is different research already showing that 2/3 of the value in early stage venture capital is in the sourcing and screening part. Said differently, venture capital is a finding and picking the winners game. And I think this is specifically where a data-driven approach can help you to, number one, source all of the opportunities top of funnel, and then help you narrow down to prioritize and focus on the most promising opportunities with your limited human capacity.
Nice. What was the most surprising insight Eagle Eye has given you, you know, that changed your investment strategy?
It's quite broad, actually. We have multiple dimensions we look into. I think if you analyze the company, so number one, we have the human kind of perspective on the opportunities, and you can actually codify different human biases. So for example, if you present specific opportunities to the investors and they can say, look, I want to double click and dive deeper on this opportunity or want to reject it, you can essentially train like a dating algorithm in a way where you can codify the different biases of the respective investment professionals. And it was very interesting to see how different investors in our team have different biases, but we also have like some common ground and collective denominator, which helps us to focus on the right opportunities collectively as a team. Now, what is very interesting, if we look at the broader sample of opportunities globally, so we have analyzed also like huge time series going decades back in terms of data, and then looked at successful companies. And if you look at these companies, there is something in data science you call moderator effects, which then changes the impact of respective features on the output. So for example, one very strong moderator effect is industry. If you look at an industry, say, I don't know, e-commerce, then in e-commerce, you will find a different set of characteristics for founders that predict successful outcomes. So in these cases, it can be previous experience in consultancies, investment banking, business school, education. So very execution heavy. Then if you change this moderator effect from e-commerce to, let's say, core energy fusion, for example, you will find that suddenly the team characteristics change to you need to have a PhD in physics whatsoever. Yeah. You need to have strong academic experience and so on. And we have found a broad set, which I also published some parts through Data-Driven VC, my newsletter, how we look at these opportunities and what are the great predictors for success of early stage companies.
That sounds super cool, super interesting, Andre. What's your most expensive data-driven fuck-up? What happened?
Oh, man. This is a long list. This is a long list. I think, like, initially I started with research. So that's, like, talking a bit about the genesis and the different mistakes we made. I started with research, and I think it was quite good in retrospect that we didn't just jump right in. But we've been very thoughtful about seeing what other, like back then very few other firms, but what other firms have tried, what we can learn also from other industries, like, I don't know, the hedge fund industry or public markets, and really try to reflect on what do we actually need to build? What is a core differentiator long term? And what can we buy? Like, if you can buy something, per definition, it's already a commodity. It's available off the shelf. So it probably in most cases won't be too much of a differentiator. So we've been quite thoughtful in terms of doing our research and then conceptualizing. And I started building these first tools myself. Like, I'm an investor from day one at Early Bird. I've been an investor and I've been building these tools for myself. And only then in 2020, we hired the first full-time engineer. And I think to your question of what is probably most expensive mistake, back then, I over-indexed on data science experience. So we hired some very deep experienced data science profiles. Whereas over time, I learned you actually need more like hungry 80-20 engineers. So engineers who can work across the stack. So I have more of a T-shaped profile versus someone who brings whatever, a PhD in NLP, and you can go super deep into a specific problem. And I learned that for our applications, we rather keep the teams very lean and have more experienced engineers that can work across the stack. And talking about the most expensive mistake is probably having hired some exceptional profiles that were actually not fit for what we've been doing. So we essentially lost some time in terms of the opportunity cost. And then obviously also paid some high profile people to go into a specific direction where over time we learned it's actually not necessary to go for this 100% solution in whatever scoring a specific opportunity or classifying this respective company.
Nice. Super insightful. Andre, how do you balance the data-driven insights with your gut feeling when they conflict? Like, and which do you trust more?
I think that's really an important question. So if you look at the spectrum of different approaches, you have the traditional VC, and traditional VC means really you rely on your networks for sourcing. So it is mostly inbound. You do very limited outbound. If you do outbound, it's desk research. You just trust your gut and your experience. It's very difficult to scale this traditional model in today's world. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have really what you could see in the hedge fund industry. Today, we call it quant VC. And quant VC is actually where you completely remove humans from the equation. It is essentially scrapers that build up the funnel of opportunities. You collect data, and then you have purely algorithms deciding on where to invest and where to pass. Mm-hmm. And then in between, you have something where I'm a strong believer in, which I call essentially the augmented venture capital approach. And the augmented leverages best of both worlds from the data-driven VC world, from the quant, and then the other hand side from the traditional. And then to your questions of how to balance it, we leverage specifically for the top of funnel. So the sourcing, building up the funnel, collecting data for all of the companies, and then narrowing down to a number of opportunities that's managed by humans. This, I think, can be fully automated. We have automated this part already, and obviously we complement it through opportunities that manually in a traditional way come through our network. Mm-hmm. But essentially, all of the opportunities that come through our network are already in our system. So for the beginning, we trust a lot on the sourcing and screening for a data-driven quant approach. Mm-hmm. But then once we meet the founders, we sit together with the founder and see her fire in the eyes burning. Yeah. This is where the human component really comes in. So the deeper down into the funnel you go, the more important the human component becomes and the less relevant actually this quant component becomes, as it is more of like one specific dimensions of many more, the likelihood of success of this company. Yeah. And it's more like a pointer to show us where to look. Are there potential red flags? Are there question marks? Outside in terms of digital footprint. So in the beginning, we rely a lot on the data-driven quant approach. And over time, it fades in with the human component that becomes incredibly important. If there is a conflict, then we have a tendency to trust our gut feeling because eventually early stage venture capital is really humans working with humans. And then the data-driven approach really comes something that is complementing our work, making us more efficient and effective to allow us to go very deep in our work with the respective founders.
Yeah. I love it. I love the answer. Andre, so does it actually also, for sure it does, but how does it differ across different stages? So like when you automate stuff at the very early stage and then like, I don't know, Series A, Series B.
Yeah. Look, I think when I started out working on this topic in 2017 in the first place, many people told me it is not possible to automate early stage venture capital. Mm. The main reasons were, number one, it is private investors investing into private companies, and neither one of them has an obligation to disclose information, which is very different from investing into public markets. That's number one. Number two, many people said early stage investing is very qualitative. You very rarely have quantitative data, traction data whatsoever. So back then, it was very difficult to process unstructured data and make sense of qualitative data versus in the later stages, public market quantitative data. So those two items, the private nature, where you only have very selective information available. And number two, the qualitative nature of the data is where many people said it's actually not possible. Today, we do see it is possible. So on the private side of the data, we see that outside in, through digital footprints of companies, we can oftentimes identify significantly more information that is actually available when the founders present you, like for a pre-seed, seed stage company, some simple slides whatsoever. We can see that through their digital footprints, what they've done before, different kind of sentiment analysis, website traction, whatsoever is out there. We can see that we actually have an information asymmetry, oftentimes knowing significantly more than other investors who just speak to the founders. That's number one. And number two, on the qualitative data, we've seen with the help and rise of large language models that we can suddenly process unstructured data and can make tons of sense. So we can either semi-quantify it. So for example, we can look at academic background of founders. We can look at universities. We can tier them into different classes. We can attribute points. Like if you attended a tier one university, you get 3 out of 3 points and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we see it as actually possible. And to your question of how that differs across stages, we see that the value of sourcing and screening is prestige. Sorry.
A lot of talking now.
Yeah. Now to your question in terms of the stages, we can see that specifically in the early stages, we can rely a lot on the sourcing and screening components. Mm-hmm. And then the later stages we invest, you actually shift the value of the data-driven approach down into the funnel. So the later you invest, the more important it becomes in terms of the screening, finding inflection points, and then into the due diligence. So for early stage investors, you have a huge universe of opportunities that you first need to identify and narrow down. For later stage investors, the universe of opportunities is significantly fewer, but they need to collect more information per company and really go deeper into the due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. André, so you go through like hundreds of or thousands of data points. Which startup metrics are often, overhyped, and which ones deserve more attention?
I guess the answer is it depends. So, for example, if you like, I lead our investments in the enterprise software, specifically everything the dev, data, AI kind of infrastructure companies. And if I look at these companies, then oftentimes what's overhyped is, for example, I don't know, GitHub stars in the dev community. Yeah. It's a great indicator for traction in the community, but building a nice Git repo is something different than building a nice company. So I've seen a couple of years back when people started analyzing these GitHub stars, conversion into Forex issues, and so on and so forth, that many investors paid crazy valuations for some of these companies just because of their GitHub traction. And then over time learned that it's actually something different to build a proper business out of that. So I'd say for this respective example, I would say this is a bit overhyped. It can be a good indicator, but it is not a great indicator for building a valuable business long-term out of it. What I think is one of the most important indicators, if we look across the spectrum, is actually very simple. It is headcount. And headcount has two dimensions. One is in the retrospect. So, for example, LinkedIn is a great source for that. There are also other providers who offer you this data. But if you look retrospect and there is, for example, a 20% month over month growth in employees, then obviously you need to put that into context of the absolute size. So, for example, if it's 100% increase and they've just grown from 2 to 4, it's probably not as strong as an indicator as if they've grown 50% from 10 to 15, for example. But it is a great retrospective indicator to identify inflection points. And this you can also turn now forward-looking. And forward-looking, you look at the job postings. And then what becomes very interesting is if you split these job postings by department. So if you look at a team, let's say, of 10 people, that's mostly researchers, engineers, and the founders, and then suddenly they start hiring their first commercial positions, which gives you an indication of like, okay, they seem to have completed a first version of the product, so now they start commercializing, which can be a good forward-looking indication for an inflection point. And the combination of this headcount data and job postings together gives you a good reflection of retrospective and forward-looking.
Awesome. André, you mentioned previously about like when you started using this within the team, within Early Bird's team, like their different biases came out among different people. How do you actually tackle the challenge of human biases creeping into AI models in VC?
Look, I think the first important thing is to really identify these biases, so to create awareness. I think it's incredibly important to actually be aware that every one of us is biased, and then we need to reflect what these biases look like. That's the first step. Second step is to then evaluate if it is good or bad biases. And that is very difficult because some investors who relied heavily on their gut feeling in the past might have made some great investments. And they said, look, I always invest in founders from this school. I always pick founders who do X, Y, and Z because they might have, for example, similarity bias. It's also their old alma mater, for example. Or, for example, they look for recency bias. They recently had a successful company. And the interesting point is to really dissect what were the factors actually driving that success and what do you draw away from that. So it might be that you have invested in two founders from the same school and they had completely different factors influencing their success. Mm-hmm. And you might draw away, okay, actually, I think it is because of the university they attended. And this is how we try to evaluate what were all of the factors, and that you can only do through a data-driven approach, to look at the full spectrum of factors that have influenced the success of companies, and then really look at the patterns among the successful companies and overlap that with the biases that you have identified. And that allows you to then map a data-driven outside-in view with an inside-out view on how you map your own biases. And that way you can find the biases across the team, what is the overlap, what might be actually some good biases, and what are other biases that might be actually a bit of a drawback and that you need to overcome. So you can do debiasing training and so on and so forth.
Got it. So actually being here already in this challenges and overcoming stuff, what was the biggest misconception about using data in venture capital that you've encountered, and maybe or a challenge you've faced in integrating data science in VC?
I think what I mentioned before in terms of general skepticism, like private companies, private investors, and qualitative nature, that was in the first place. And then what I learned is actually finding this right balance between make versus buy. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are already some very strong components, best of breed tools out there. I call it the investment tech landscape. There are many tools I've been also writing about in data-driven VC. And to find the right balance between make versus buy, what do you need to have in-house? What can be very differentiating in the long term versus what is a commodity? So I think this balance is very, very difficult. And nowadays people are overwhelmed with the breadth of available tools. Okay. Now, I think the biggest bottleneck or blocker beyond all is actually culture. I've learned that when speaking to other firms who have started data-driven initiatives sometimes back, but then stopped it again and asked them, what was it? Like, was it that you, like, it wasn't technically unfeasible? Mm-hmm. Was it that you didn't find the right tools? Did you find the right talent to implement it? And it was none of those. So if you have a good concept, you will find the right talent. With the right talent, you can implement, find the right balance between make versus buy. Mm-hmm. But then eventually, you're still part of an investment firm. And investment firms per culture are very special in a way. Mm-hmm. So in investment firms, and it depends a lot, early stage investment firms are oftentimes different in profiles than later stage investment firms, which have a tendency towards more IB and so on and so forth. Yeah. But you can see that more generally, it's like a hustling culture. So the more you work / input, the better and more output you can generate. So this is a big misconception. And venture, early stage venture, if you hit this one outlier per year, nobody cares if you work, whatever, 10 hours a week or 70 hours a week. I think that's a big misconception. And you need to change the culture to actually free up capacity, change your workflows, to then focus on the right opportunities and go very deep. And I've learned with many different other firms that this cultural blocker, so lack of top-down buy-in from the GPs who essentially sponsor these internal initiatives and budgets, plus also the culture within the investment team who's supposed to use these tools, are the biggest blockers among all of the other factors.
That's awesome. Andre, so imagine like someone listening to this conversation and still not convinced that this is the right approach and the way to go. Imagine a room full of, I don't know, traditional VCs who are skeptical about integrating AI and data into their processes. And now you've got 1 minute to pitch data-driven VC to them. What would your pitch sound like?
I think what's very important is that, first of all, we need to differentiate the spectrum of venture capital firms. So I've written an episode in my newsletter recently about it, where if we look at the spectrum across, let's say, the stages you invest in and the fund sizes, and it starts really with micro VC solo GPs, kind of very small. Then you have essentially early stage VCs, and within early stage VCs, you have more scalable ones and more boutique firms. Then you have on the next stage growth VC firms, and there is an overlap of early stage and growth, which are these multi-stage firms, and then you have really late stage firms. And I think we spoke a bit earlier about the importance of data-driven approaches across the value chain, sourcing, screening, due diligence, and how that relates to the stages. And then there is also the question of how much do you actually need to scale. So my perception is that specifically solo GPs, micro VCs, for them it's a lot about efficiency, but they can probably rely with a very strong focus on sectors, geographies, on their networks. So they don't need to scale their networks beyond whatever, 5 investments, 7 investments per year, where they also oftentimes a follower. So for them, it's quite sufficient in most of the cases to rely on a network. Uh-huh. Early stage VCs that have more of a lead proposition, they need to see more comprehensive deal flow coverage to spot the right opportunities. They need to become bigger, get bigger shareholding, and so on and so forth. So for early stage VCs, I think it's the only way to really go and stay competitive, because we can see already, we run tons of internal analysis on how our data-driven approaches have improved our coverage across geographies and sectors, how much ahead of other VCs we can talk to respective founders, how it helps us also in terms of due diligence, how we can map, competitive landscapes, how we can benchmark metrics and so on and so forth, and actually make all of these insights accessible to the founders to help us also win competitive deals. So we can see already today, we measure that across the value chain, that it helps us to become better investors. And I think like probably 3-5 years out, it will be so obvious that those who haven't started in due time to launch these initiatives internally, they specifically among the early stage funds that invest across geographies and sectors will not be competitive anymore. So this is very obvious to me, and we have the numbers already across efficiency. Like our team is more than 50% more efficient than they've been before. Our deal flow coverage has improved significantly. We see 19 out of 20 opportunities at least 1 month ahead of what we deem as competitor funds. So we can measure all of these dimensions and we can see the strong impact already.
Mic drop. Andre, for those new in VC, for those who are just starting out, what's the most critical skill they should learn first?
I think be open-minded, continuously question yourself. So we've been doing that from the very beginning. As Early Bird is really a multi-generational firm where we still have our founding partners on board, and they have ingrained into our DNA to continuously question our own business model and continuously innovate. So when I got to Early Bird 7 years ago for the first time and said, look, I don't understand why you work the way how you work. You need to think in a new way, like data-driven, AI, technology in your core. You need to become like from an investment firm investing into technology, essentially a technology firm deploying capital into other technology firms. So really this mindset shift. And I got this buy-in from day one. It resonated really well with the partners back then. And we have transformed Early Bird into a modern venture capital firm. And I think this is something I would also recommend to others just starting out in venture capital. Continuously question the status quo. Don't just take it as a given that everything is done like it was done 20 years ago. Yeah. So continuously question the processes, how you look at companies, be open-minded and be humble. So it is a gift for me to do this job over and over again, work with the smartest people across the founders, people on the LP side within our team. And I think we should be a very humble, continuously question ourselves to stay hungry and be competitive in the future.
Amazing. I love it. Andre, speaking about the future, how do you see VC evolving over the next 10 years? What was the next big thing in VC tools that you're excited about?
I think VC more generally has professionalized a lot. So we've seen specifically here in Europe in the past 5 years with zero interest rate policies, many more funds popping up left and right. We saw American funds coming over because they've seen you can get comparably low entry valuations, but at the same time, companies out of Europe can become as big as their American counterpeers. Yeah. So we had these different kind of effects, which also led to more competition among VCs and then eventually a professionalization. And this professionalization has essentially led to also new models like micro VCs, solo GPs, different kind of specialization, boutique firms versus huge asset aggregators. And we've seen these different kind of models of venture capital evolve, and I expect we will see many more. We have seen different kind of scouting networks, VCs suddenly launching incubators and so on and so forth. And I'm really excited to see more and more of these models evolve in the future. That's one. And number two, on the tech stack, I did the exercise sometime back, looking 1 week, I tracked every single tool I worked with, and I ended up with more than 80 tools. So I also wrote about this in the past where I highlighted all of the tools I've been working with.
Yeah.
And what I expect is that after this first wave of investment tech, which was really best of breed for every single piece and part of the process, we will now see an aggregation. So I assume that in the next couple of years, we will see more of a single source of truth. Because right now it's too much context switching, it's too much friction between integrating tools that are not natively integrating. So you lose context, you lose information, but also time. And I assume that, and we can see early signs of that already, that some players across the investment tech stack start integrating with each other. And the question is, who will eventually own the user? So I expect that we go from a very fragmented tech stack into more of a single source of truth, really one stop shop for the whole VC value chain from a tech perspective.
Awesome. Andre, if when you're not all about a VC and backing founders, change the data, what is Andre all about?
I think I'm probably very curious. Always try to look for new challenges, be that in my private life. We've done like tons of traveling. We really visited a lot of the world. We've tried many different sports. I try to meet new people. I try to continuously learn. So whenever I meet someone who's doing new sports and it's like, hey, I'm doing kiting. Did you ever try? No, I didn't. So why don't we find some time where I can teach you? So let's just do it. And I think we only like life is too short to continue doing what you do. And there are also studies which have shown that essentially those people who are the happiest later on in their life are the ones that continuously question the status quo, who have changed their habits over time and always progress across dimensions of private life, sports, health, wealth, job, learning, and so on. And this is really what I try to do across all of the dimensions, both with my family, but also in the professional life and also privately for myself.
I love it. This is a great thing to end this podcast with. But before we go, Andrew, do you have any new exciting initiatives or projects, either within Early Bird or outside of it, that you're excited about?
Look, I think with Early Bird, we continue what we've been doing for the past 27 years, backing the most visionary tech founders across Europe at pre-seed, seed, and Series A stages. So whenever you build something exciting, just reach out to me, to us. And otherwise, I really enjoy writing. I enjoy interacting with our community of, of investors, founders who are really interested in leveraging AI, data-driven approaches across businesses, but specifically in the investment world. So if you are interested in that, just check out Data-Driven VC.
Amazing. Everyone, that was a masterclass on Data-Driven VC by Andre Retterat. Thanks so much for your time. I hope to see you soon in Barcelona or maybe in Munich. And it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Martin. It was a great pleasure.